what characteristics and qualifications you should have to actually be committed to the path of your devotional service, and what to do as naturally tends to happen in the early stages. One cannot always follow the process strictly, and sometimes becomes entangled in sense gratification. And how Krishna is instructing Uddhava that one should not become discouraged and chronically depressed, but actually should go on happily, gladly, in relationship with Krishna with a strong determination, and repent of one's activity, repent of the sinful activities, but continue on with devotional service. That was the first text. The second text, yesterday morning, we heard Sruta Goswami tell the sages of Naimisharanya Forest how he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. He heard it with rapt attention and was now going to explain it to them according to how he heard it and how he himself realized it personally. There's a very wonderful purport here by Srila Prabhupada, which explains that Bhagavatam does not take place really unless there's a qualified speaker and a qualified hearer. A qualified hearer hears from somebody in the specific session and hears with rapt attention. There's a mystical process that goes on that realized knowledge ultimately is that one sees Krishna directly in the pages. Krishna appears directly in the pages, but for this to happen, one has to hear with rapt attention. This is analogous also to the process of cultivating the holy name. The holy name is chanted purely. You see, it's no different from Krishna. And then Prabhupada explains that to hear with rapt attention, one has to be pure in mind. One cannot be pure in mind unless one is pure in action. One cannot be pure in action unless one is pure in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That is even the most basic biological activities of life. But if someone does this and hears with rapt attention, then one can actually hear Bhagavatam properly. The proper hearer becomes, in turn, the speaker. And the nature of realized knowledge is that one can preserve exactly the purport of the text, the understanding of the previous acharyas, and yet explain it and give it to others in a way that is fresh, new, and lively, and understandable by them. That's the essence of that discussion. Then, in the afternoon, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.15.8, where these are the prayers that Prahlad Maharaj is leading the residents of Harivarsha into Lord Nrisimhadev. Here he's praying to the Lord Nrisimhadev to appear in his heart with his very powerful fangs and claws like bolts of lightning, and drive out karmashayan, the deposit of longings and desires to enjoy in the world, and destroy ignorance. And so Prabhupada instructs us here that basically points out that in effect this personification of this karmashayan, this deep-rooted, this stock of material desires, the emblem of that is Saranyakashipu. So in effect we have the Saranyakashipu in our hearts, and to deal with him, we should pray to Lord Nrisimhadev to appear in our hearts and destroy it for us. And Prabhupada says we should pray by hearing the Sringa, Vridhaye Nisringa. Whoa, we already do, don't we? When we're praying Vridhaye Nisringa, we're asking the Sringa Dev to appear in our hearts and get rid of them. We had some discussion about what if I'm asking and he still doesn't come, and the conclusion is that one has to ask with some deep sincerity and real desire. It can't be, please destroy all my material desires but this one, or please destroy them in 10 years. Okay, so that now today's text, let's chant. Today's text will bring together some of the elements of here. In today's text, first of all, we will get a very good illustration of Srila Prabhupada giving us his own realized knowledge of things he has experienced for himself. It comes clear with this. And this today's text is really about how, again, one carries on the disciplic succession and the process of devotional service and the aims of Krishna after the disappearance of the spiritual master. And these texts, there's a series actually, this is the last of the series, the one that we're going to chant and look at the report carefully. So I'm going to start a little sooner. But in this series of texts, Prabhupada tells his disciples what to do when he leaves. And if everybody paid a little more attention, although it's something everybody should have known anyway, but it's not too late by any means. It's the only thing left to do. So I'm going to have a little different procedure. I'm going to start with text 45 and go through them. You don't have that with you, unfortunately. Then we get to 51, we'll chant it and then read the purport. First we'll do this. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So here, this is the fourth canto, and it's chapter 28. Paranjana becomes a woman in the next life. So this is one of those series of chapters which contains the teachings of Narada Muni to King Tatsumi Vahisha, a materialistic king engaged in many big karma kanda sacrifices and killing lots of animals. And so Narada Muni is instructing him on the path of transcendence, and he does by telling him a story that's clearly allegorical. That there was a king once very much like you, he says, Paranjana. One who lives in a pura, a city. Paranjana, the habitant of the city, and this city had 9 gates, that is to say, the body, and so on. So he goes on and tells how Paranjana becomes entangled and the whole story, what the material world is like. And then in this chapter, Paranjana was very attached to his queen, and so he became queen himself in his next life. He became a woman. And the daughter of the king of Vidarbha, so Vaidarbhi is her name, and she married to a king, the king of Malayadwaja. So where we're picking up now in text 45, the king in his older age, he retires and goes to the forest to practice severe austerities and penances, and she, being faithful queen, does all the same things with him. Now, at this point, she discerns that he has passed away. Text 45, the daughter of King Vidarbha continued as usual to serve her husband, who was seated in a steady posture, until she could ascertain that he had passed away from the body. Text 46, while she was serving her husband by massaging his legs, she could feel that his feet were no longer warm, and could thus understand that he had already passed from the body. She felt great anxiety upon being left alone. Bereft of her husband's company, she felt exactly as the deer feels upon being separated from its mate. Being now alone and a widow in that forest, the daughter of Vidarbha began to lament, incessantly shedding tears which soaked her breasts and crying very loudly. So she was in extreme distress, naturally. Inconsolable. She's sociti, lamenting, dinam, wretched, abandhum, abandoned, without a friend, viklava, broken hearted, ashu, tears, danu, and wetting her breast with her tears, and she cries very, very loudly. So now Prabhupada tells us that allegorical meaning, beginning in 47. He says, figuratively, the queen is supposed to be the disciple of the king. Thus, when the mortal body of the spiritual master expires, his disciples should cry exactly as the queen cries when the king leaves his body. So this is because the disciples should be extremely attached to the spiritual master. This attachment is not material. It's a spiritual attachment. And so naturally when there's separation, there's lamenting in this way. But Prabhupada continues, however, the disciple and the spiritual master are never separated. So here where you might think the analogy breaks down. It doesn't really quite, but we'll see what happens. However, the disciple and the spiritual master are never separated because the spiritual master always keeps company with the disciple as long as the disciple follows strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. And here's Prabhupada's theme. This is called association of vani, words. V-A-N-I, two long vowels and the end with a dot under it, vani. Association of vani, words. Physical presence is called vani. Babu means vani means speech. As long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master. And when the spiritual master is no longer physically existing, the disciple should serve the instructions of the spiritual master. This is called Vani Seva. So this is his theme. The disciple and spiritual master are never separated. Of course, the disciple should lament, but still can stay in association with the spiritual master because the spiritual master will keep company with the disciple as long as the disciple follows strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. You know where this comes from. Lord Chaitanya's teachings to the Brahmin Kumar, who wanted Lord Chaitanya to stay there, and Mahaprabhu was leaving, and he said no. He says, just Amar Ajnai Guru Hana, under my directions, under my instructions, you become Guru, and you deliver the people in your own country, and if you strictly follow these instructions, you will never be separated from them. This is the basis of this. The Prabhupada doesn't evoke it, cite it here explicitly. This is where this comes from. The association of Vani, words, or instructions. So, it continues, text 48. So here in this text, the question is how to mitigate the distress of separation. One can always stay in association with the spiritual master when there's the distress of separation, and what to do. So the mitigation, the relief for the queen or for the disciple, is this Vani Seva. So the queen is first lamenting about herself. It says that explicitly in the Sanskrit there. Atmanam Sochati. She's lamenting about herself. But then the next text, 48, she laments about the country. She says, Utishta, Utishta, Rajarshe. Get up, get up, O Raja Rishi. He calls her husband a Raja Rishi. Get up, get up. She says, see how this earth, which is surrounded by the ocean, is now become very much threatened by Dashu, thieves, rogues, criminals, and Kshatra Bandhu. Friends of the Kshatriyas, in other words, incompetent or pretender kings, so-called kings, kings, people who are acting like kings but are not qualified. So this one, so the king is gone, and so now the government, which is supposed to curb down thieves and usurpers and things like that, is not there, and these people suddenly, now's our chance. That's right. That's what we, yeah, government's got to do that. Prabhupada's purport now, the allegorical meaning. Whenever an acharya comes, remember the king is specifically a Rajarshi. I mean, he is definitely also a spiritual person. Whenever an acharya comes, following the superior orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his representative, he establishes the principles of religion as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita. So now we're going to, Prabhupada's going to tell us a little bit in essence what are, in fact, the instructions of the spiritual master. They turn out to be the instructions of Krishna. Yeah. Religion means, goes to the acharya, under order himself, establishes the principle of religion. He also obeys, he's also under orders like we are. Establishes the principles of religion. Religion means abiding by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Religious principles begin from the time one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are other orders, but they all lead to this, and so they're consummated with the surrender. It is the acharya's duty to spread a bona fide religious system and induce everyone to bow down before the Supreme Lord. One executes the religious principles by rendering devotional service, specifically the 9 items, like hearing, chanting, and remembering. Unfortunately, when the Acharya disappears, when he comes, he establishes. When the Acharya disappears, rogues and non-devotees take advantage and immediately begin to introduce unauthorized principles in the name of so-called swamis, yogis, philanthropists, welfare workers, and so on. Other people who say this is religion, but it's not. It has some other aim. Actually, human life is meant for executing the orders of the Supreme Lord, and this is stated in Bhagavad Gita 9:34. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyayi mam namaskaru mam ivaisha siyutvaivam atmanam matfarayana. Engage your mind always in thinking of me and become my devotee, offer obeisances and worship me, be completely absorbed in me. Surely you will come to me. The main business of human society is to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times. I don't have this soft, delicate ring either. I'm sorry. The main business of human society is to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times, to become his devotee, to worship the Supreme Lord and to bow down before him. The Acharya, the authorized representative of the Supreme Lord, establishes these principles. But when he disappears, things once again become disordered. The perfect disciples of the Acharya try to relieve the situation by sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master. At the present moment, practically the entire world is afraid of rogues and non-devotees. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement has started to save the world from irreligious principles. So here's Prabhupada's mission. Everyone should cooperate with this movement in order to bring about actual peace and happiness in the world. So the disciples have a responsibility. It's not only their own distress they have to mitigate, but they have to carry on the mission of the Acharya and mitigate the distress of the whole kingdom, which is this island earth. So then, the text continues. That most obedient wife thus fell down at the feet of her dead husband and began to cry pitifully in that solitary forest. Thus the tears rolled down from her eyes. And again, Prabhupada remarks, just as a devoted wife becomes afflicted, the passing away of her husband, when a spiritual master passes away, the disciple becomes similarly bereaved. So, the queen, she then prepared a blazing fire with firewood, and placed the dead body of her husband upon it. When this was finished, she lamented severely and prepared herself to perish in the fire with her husband. This is the traditional system. So we see the grief of the disciples. So the queen, so much her commitment to the king is such that she wants to perish along with him. The understanding is this way she would keep his association, because the understanding was in whatever destination, usually this is performed by people who are into their karma kanda, the king would go to heavenly planets and she would then, they would be together again in the heavenly planets by her doing this. So this is really, although Prabhupada doesn't explicitly mention this is how they keep association by this method. She attains the same destination as her husband by this total commitment and extreme attachment. In the allegorical sense, similarly, a devoted disciple from the spiritual master would rather die with the spiritual master than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. This is another way of keeping association. But that same commitment is there, that you're willing to lay down your life for the mission of the spiritual master. Again, Prabhupada repeats, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down upon this earth to reestablish the principles of religion, so his representative, the spiritual master, also comes to reestablish religious principles. So then he continues with his main theme, it is the duty of the disciples to take charge of the mission of the spiritual master and execute it properly. Otherwise, the disciple should decide to die along with the spiritual master. In other words, to execute the will of the spiritual master, the disciple should be prepared to lay down his life and abandon all personal considerations. That's the meaning of this. So now we come to text 51, where there's an interesting occurrence in the narrative. So now we'll chant this text here. And then, So text 51. Tatra purvataraha
purvataraha
kaschit
Sakar
Ramanaha Atmavan Santvayan. The start is here to be Valguna Samna Tam Aha Rudatim Prabho. Tatra purva tarathaschit Saka brahmana atmavan Santayan phalguna phalguna samna Namaha rudatim prabho Tatra purva tarathaschit
Satra
purva jana tashit
Sukha brahmana atmavan
Sandhayam halguna samna
Sandhayam halguna samna
Tamaha rudatim prabho
Tamaha rudatim prabho. Hey, ladies, okay.
Tatra purvata kaschit
Tatra purvata kaschit
Sukha brahmana atmavan
Sukha brahmana atmavan
Santvayam bhagana samna
Santvayam bhagana samna
Tam aharudatim prabho
Tam aharudatim prabho.
Tatra,
tatra,
in that place,
in that place,
purvatara,
purvatara,
previous,
previous,
kaschit, Someone, someone, so ka, so ka, friend, brahmana, brahmana, a brahmana, a brahmana, atmavan, atmavan, very learned scholar, very learned scholar, santayam, santayam, pacifying, pacifying, bhaguna, bhaguna, by very nice, by very nice. Samna,
samna,
mitigating words, tam,
tam,
under her, aha,
aha,
he said, rudatim,
rudatim,
while she was crying,
Prabhu,
my dear king, Translation, my dear king, one Brahmana, who was an old friend of King Paranjana, came to that place and began to pacify the queen with sweet words. I'm going to talk about this purport as we go through it rather than read the whole thing. So notice now, she's about to fling herself onto the fire, and suddenly a certain kaschit, a certain person, Purvata Rasaka, a friend from previous times, old friend, who is a Brahmana, and Atmavan, who was new to science of the self, self-realized, a learned scholar. This friend appears there in that place, and now he begins to console her. To mitigate her grief and distress with very nice words. So the purport, the appearance of an old friend in the form of a Brahmana is very significant. So now we're going to find the allegorical meaning. In his Paramatma feature, Krishna is the old friend of everyone. In other words, this Brahmana is Paramatma. Symbolically, the Paramatma appears in the disciple, to the disciple, right? According to Vedic injunction, now Prabhupada explains a little bit about Paramatma, Krishna is sitting within every living entity, side by side, sitting with the living entity, side by side. They're both in the heart, in the body, but they're next to each other. According to the Shruti Mantra, Dva Suparna Sayuja Sakaya, the Lord is sitting within the heart of every living entity as Suhrit, the best friend. So this word had been used, Saka, friend. Here, Sakaya, a friend. A Suhrit is a particular kind of friend, one who wishes one well. Like an uncle, or something a little more powerful than you are, but kind of takes care of you, smooths your way. In business, we call a rabbi. Right? The police department, you have a rabbi who's like this. You know, you join the police department, but you have an uncle or somebody or a friend of the family who's higher position, and he makes sure you keep this anyway. Suhrit. So the Lord is there with the living entity and very friendly disposed in a very friendly way. The Lord is always eager to have the living entity come home back to Godhead. That's his mood, his eagerness. Sitting with the living entity as witness, the Lord gives him all chances to enjoy himself materially, because he kind of hands off. Just like parents sometimes, they have to, let the kids run on a long leash. And so the Lord gives him all chances to enjoy himself materially, but whenever there is an opportunity, the Lord gives good counsel and advises the living entity to abandon trying to become happy through material adjustment and instead turn his face toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender to him. Now Prabhupada immediately gives the next sentence, the allegorical purport. When one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, as the queen was serious to follow her husband, when one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, remember, Prabhupada already used this phrase, in the text 49, a devoted disciple, the spiritual master would rather die with the spiritual master than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. It is the duty of the disciple to take charge of the mission of the spiritual master. So here, when one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, his resolution is tantamount to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The phrase tantamount to means equivalent to. Or when something comes to the same thing as something else, it's tantamount to. So the appearance of this brahmana indicates the appearance or the manifestation of the super soul. Right? Seeing the Supreme Personality of God. When one is serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, that is equivalent to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As explained before, this means meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the instruction of the spiritual master, this is technically called Vani Seva. See, he's already explained what serving Vani is. So when there's Vani Seva, one has the association of the spiritual master and Krishna. Now Krishna appears. Remember in the earlier text we were talking about seeing the Supreme Lord in the pages of Bhagavatam. Now one sees the Supreme Lord in the instructions of the spiritual master if one is following them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states in his Bhagavad Gita commentary on the verse Vyavasa Atmika Bhutir Ekeha Kuru Nandana that one should serve the words of the spiritual master. Now I'll come back to this a little later on. In this commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Prabhupada refers to this commentary over and over and over again. You start looking for it, you'll find that he mentions it all the time. And Vishwanath Chakravarti says, "What is Krishna says in order to be successful in devotional service, one if this is what's required, this single-minded dedication, vyavasadhika bhuti." And Vishwanath Chakravarti says that this means taking the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul and giving up all other considerations. One should not worry about success or failure. One should not even worry about whether one becomes liberated or not. One should simply follow that instruction. This is what he says in this purport. And for Prabhupada, this was encountering this purport at a certain point was a big moment for him. I'll go back to that. One should serve the words of the spiritual master. In other words, Vani Seva, simply following the orders of the spiritual master, the instructions of the spiritual master. The disciple must stick to whatever the spiritual master orders. Simply by following on that line, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, is an interesting consideration. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, appeared before the Queen as a Brahmana. But why didn't he appear in his original form as Sri Krishna? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur remarks, that is on his commentary to this verse, that unless one is very highly elevated in loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot see him as he is. Nonetheless, if one sticks to the principles enunciated by the spiritual master, somehow or other, he is in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Lord is in the heart, he can advise sincere disciple from within. So what Prabhupada is saying, at this point, one receives guidance or direction, minimally, from the Supersoul. If one is fixed in this way, on the order of the spiritual master, you may see the Supersoul, but you will hear the Supersoul, so one will be in contact. Maybe you won't see Krishna yet in Vrindavan or whatever, but and so here he's talking about the direction of the Supersoul, and he confirms this by quoting Bhagavad Gita 10:10. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So I give them the dhami, this buddhi yoga, yinamamupayamba, and by that they can approach me. In conclusion, if a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapu. Now notice this sentence. This is a little tricky, right? We've been talking about associating with the spiritual master by Vani or Vapu, and now it's with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapu. You notice how it's has done this. He immediately, notice the term immediately, one becomes serious to execute the order of the spiritual master, then immediately he associates with the Supreme Personality of God. At one stage it may be by Vani, you will know what Krishna wants, you will receive intelligence from Krishna what to do, or more advanced, Vapu. But somehow or other one is associated, either personally or... This is the only secret of success. This phrase occurs in this context all the time. Following the order of the spiritual master is the secret of success. This is the only secret of success. Instead of seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, now Prabhupada talks about an alternative attempt by some to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush of Vrindavan, while at the same time engaging in sense gratification, if one instead sticks to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. Srila Bilva Mangala Thakur has therefore said, and so Prabhupada concludes this purport by this verse from the Krishna Karnamrita, if I am engaged in devotional service to you, my dear Lord, bhaktistoyi stiratata, very firmly, then very easily can I perceive your presence everywhere. Daivainana palati divya kishor murti, everywhere I see divya kishor murti. Form as a transcendental youth. And then I think that as far as liberation, mukti per swayam personally, stands there, Mukti Anjali, with hands like this, ready to serve me, and Dharma, Artha, Kama, and so on, they are also there, standing with her in the same attitude of service, waiting for my orders expectantly. This is so that so Prabhupada says, if one is very highly advanced in devotional service, he will have no difficulty in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one engages in the service of the spiritual master, he not only sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but attains liberation. As far as material conveniences are concerned, they automatically come, just as the maidservants of a queen follow the queen wherever she goes. Liberation is no problem for the pure devotee, and all material conveniences are simply awaiting him at all stages of life. Everything comes from simply being determined to follow the order of the spiritual master. All resources, seeing the Lord, I just want to read a little bit from the purport to the next verse. Prabhupada says, the one who is sincere and pure gets an opportunity to consult with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his Paramatma feature sitting within everyone's heart. The Paramatma is always the Chaitya Guru, the spiritual master within, and he can also come out before a person and give him instructions. Thus the spiritual master is not different from the super soul sitting within the heart. An uncontaminated soul or living entity can get a chance to meet the Paramatma face to face, just as one gets a chance to consult with the Paramatma within his heart. He also gets a chance to see him actually situated before him outside. Then one can take instruction from the super soul directly. This is the duty of the pure devotee, to see the bona fide spiritual master and consult with the super soul in the heart. When one is following the orders of the spiritual master, the super soul is available. So if the super soul is there, then everyone knows how to do things. One receives guidance. And this is how the devotee remains in association with the spiritual master, and so that when the spiritual master, the difficulties arising from the disappearance of the spiritual master, both for the devotee personally and for everybody in general, are mitigated. I want to. His Prabhupada tells his own story. In Los Angeles in 1968, December 9th, it was the disappearance day of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And so Prabhupada says, starts reflecting, well, this is what he's telling a little bit about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he says, by Krishna's arrangement, we came in contact. He says, Krishna's arrangement. I was born in a different family. My Guru Maharaj was born in a different family. Who knew that I will come to his protection? Who knew that I would come into America? Who knew that you American boys will come to me? These are all Krishna's arrangements. We cannot understand how things are taking place. In 1936, today's 9 December 1968, that means 32 years ago, in Bombay, I was then doing some business. So Prabhupada starts to tell the story, how I came here. After he said, we cannot understand how these are happening, now he explains to some extent how it happened. 32 years ago in Bombay, I was then doing some business. All of a sudden, perhaps on this date, sometime between 9 or 10 December, at that time, Guru Maharaj was indisposed a little. That means ill. Indisposed. Was indisposed a little, and he was staying at Jagannath Puri on the seashore. People would go there for their health because of sea breezes and so on. So I wrote him a letter. My dear master, your other disciples, Brahmachari, Sannyasi, they are rendering you direct service. I am a householder. I cannot live with you. I cannot serve you nicely. So I do not know how. How can I serve you? Prabhupada says, simply an idea. I was thinking of serving him. How can I serve him seriously? So Prabhupada, he says, so I wrote him a letter. Simply an idea. Oh yeah, all of a sudden, perhaps on this day, no, it was a sort of an impulse. Prabhupada used the expression, all of a sudden. He means it was an impulse. He was thinking like this. Because the Gaudiya Math was, everybody was working hard. There were sannyasis and brahmacharis, and householders were pretty marginal people and not expected to do too much. And plus, he was doing business in Bombay. That is entangling, then and now. So he was feeling some lack. How can I serve you? Simply an idea. I was thinking of serving him. So the reply is dated 13th December 1936. And that letter he wrote, my dear such and such, I am very glad to receive your letter. I think you should try to push our movement in English. This was his writing. And that will do good to you and the people who will help you. That was his instruction. And then in 1936, on the 31st December, that means just after writing this letter, a fortnight before his departure, he passed away. But I took that order of my spiritual master very seriously, but I did not think that I'll have to do such and such a thing. At that time, I was a householder. So you have to understand the context a little bit. To push on our movement in English meant go to the West. And this was a very well-known order of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because he had given it to almost every one of his leaders that he thought was capable, his sannyasis. This was the order Bhakti Siddhanta was giving to these sannyasis, and then he turns around and gives it to Prabhupada. he says, this was, I did not think that I would have to do such and such a thing. In other words, I couldn't figure out how will I get there from here. So it was a very surprising order. First of all, that it was this order to preach in English, go to the West. Second of all, he'd given it to so many of his leaders of his various mosques. And so everybody knew that this was Bhakti Siddhanta's biggest desire. And so far, some people came, but Bhakti Siddhanta was very disappointed in that particular enterprise. They went to London and came back, failure. Lost a lot of money, disappeared, so on. So I took that order of my spiritual master seriously, but I did not think that I have to do such and such a thing. I was at that time a householder. But this is the arrangement of Krishna. Remember Prabhupada's, the Krishna's right? If we strictly try to serve the spiritual master, his order, then Krishna will give us all facilities. So he's saying at that time I had no facility to do it. I couldn't imagine what I would do. Remember in the purport we're reading today how he quotes Bhava Mangala Thakur, that everything comes. Muktis like this and Dharma Artha Kama Moksha are standing by ready to do what you want. So you don't have to make any other arrangements except this one arrangement. We're talking about faith. I mean, this is what faith means. You, you have this confidence that if we strictly decide to serve the spiritual master, his order, then Krishna will give us all facilities. That is the secret. There's his word, huh, again. The secret of success. That is the secret. Although there was no possibility, I never thought. In other words, Prabhupada is saying, it was impossible. It was like mission impossible. You know, there was no possibility. I never thought. I couldn't make plans how to do this, how to do that. But I took it little seriously by studying a commentary by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on Bhagavad Gita. So see, he alludes to this here. In the Bhagavad Gita, the verse Vyavasa Atmika Bhutir Ekeha Kuru Nandana, in connection with that verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives his commentary that we should take up the words from the spiritual master as our life and soul. We should try to carry out the instructions, the specific instruction of the spiritual master, very rigidly without caring for our personal benefit or loss. That's the summary of the purport. You just do it. And that's success. And you don't worry about anything else, our personal benefit or loss. So Prabhupada had this instruction. He was obviously meditating on it and thinking what I should do. He read this purport and he just said, I'll just follow it. I'll just do it. I'll start wherever I can and just let it happen. So I tried a little bit in that spirit, he says. So he has given me all facilities to serve him. Remember Prabhupada is saying, here I am in Los Angeles from another country, you're here, we're together. How did this happen? Right? And if you look at Srila Prabhupada, you can see what he went through, that for a long time it looked like not much was going to happen. There was a history of frustration, failure, and difficulty. He tries when he's a householder, it doesn't work out very well. He has to finally leave his family. He tries to start this League of Devotees in Jhansi, and that gets undermined by politics and those kind of things. He tries to go work in the Gaudiya Math. They wouldn't give him any facility for preaching. He finally goes off by himself, where he sits in Vrindavan, and he gets this old typewriter and he starts typing. Remember, he's 44. He started Back to Godhead magazine, printing it up, distributing, writing in English, getting him his practice. You know, I think he thought first he'll start something in India, then he'll bring this movement over to the West, but wasn't to happen, but he just didn't quit. So I tried a little bit in that spirit. So he has given me all facilities to serve him. Things have come to this stage that now, in this old age, I have come to your country. And you are also taking this movement seriously, trying to understand it. We have got some books now. So there is a little foothold of this movement. Now this is something very interesting that happens. Everybody knows this order was given to preach in English and go to the West. I've met a number of God brothers who say, you know, Prabhupada never gave me an order. Somebody's lucky their spiritual master told me to do the X, but never... You X, but never told me anything. But this is what actually happened. So there's little foothold of the movement. So on this occasion of my spiritual master's departure, as I am trying to execute his will, similarly, I shall also request you to execute the same order through my will. I am an old man. I can also pass away at any moment. That is nature's law. Nobody can check it. So that is not very astonishing. But my appeal to you on this auspicious day, the departure of my Guru Maharaj, that at least to some extent you have understood the essence of Krishna consciousness movement, you should try to push it on. People are suffering from want of this consciousness. As we daily pray about devotees, Panchakalpa, Kripishchan, Kripasindhu, Bhivacha, Patitanam, Avanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. A Vaishnava, or devotee of the Lord, his life is dedicated for the benefit of the people. And then he goes into the description of that. This Krishna consciousness movement means to become Vaishnava and feel for suffering humanity. That's what Go to the West meant. You should have some feeling for suffering humanity. And then Prabhupada has a little discussion about people understand why people suffer from different angles of vision. So some people become charitable and open hospitals and so on. That's very well and good. But we know the real reason they're suffering is from want of Krishna consciousness. And so we should care for these people suffering. So Prabhupada concludes like this. One should be very much pessimistic of this material world. Then he can make advance in spiritual life. Dukkalayam ashaswatam. This place is full of miseries, and if you study analytically, you will find simply miserable condition. Therefore, the whole problem is that we should give up our material conditional life, and in Krishna consciousness, we should try to elevate ourselves to the spiritual platform and thereby be promoted to the kingdom of God. We're going, nobody comes back to this material, to this miserable world. And that is the supreme abode of the Lord. So there are descriptions in Bhagavad Gita. So this Krishna consciousness movement is authorized. Very important. Now you American boys and girls who have taken to this movement, please take it more seriously. And that is the mission of Lord Chaitanya and my Guru Maharaj. And we are also trying to execute the will by the civic succession. You have come forward to help me. I shall request you all that I shall go away, but you shall live. Don't give up pushing on this movement, and you'll be blessed by Lord Chaitanya and His divine grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami. Prabhupada, thank you very much. Any questions? That's a stupid question. Well, let me just say one thing. So you notice that Prabhupada says, now I'm giving you the same order that my spiritual master gave me. You have understood this Krishna consciousness. So we should become devotees ourselves, and we should give Krishna consciousness to other people. The same order. One should have some feeling for suffering humanity. So it has been passed. It has been passed down. And everywhere you see, this is a very powerful thread running through so much of Prabhupada's teachings about how one is supposed to be both come liberated oneself and be empowered to give Krishna consciousness to others to become guru by this strictly following the orders of the spiritual master. So here are these instructions that he gives in this fourth canto allegory about what to do when the spiritual master disappears. Any questions?
I was going to ask about the one that you sent in the beginning when you were talking about how the queen wanted to. I know it was an allegory too, but also it seems like it's a tradition in India that people take seriously that the woman should perish with her husband. So I was wondering how perishing with her husband is not suicidal, and I was thinking possibly such attachment to your husband, if you're willing to kill yourself for him, wouldn't they cause downfall to the realm of hell?
No, there's some suicides that's okay. Like, for example, when a yogi sits like this and voluntarily gives up the body because he goes either to the higher planets, so when it's beneficial, when one makes spiritual advancement by it, then it's not considered. There are approved forms of suicide. If there's a bunch of soldiers and one guy throws himself on a hand grenade and spares his 12 friends,
that's giving up your life, isn't it?
That's suicide. You killed yourself. It's suicide, isn't it? Suicide means you kill yourself, right?
Yeah.
So that's suicide. We all go, yeah, yeah, hero, medal of honor. Some suicides are actually okay.
The reason I was concerned was because when I was in my teens, I was suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily God saved me from
it. Well, no, we're not... Suicide doesn't mean you do it out of self-hatred.
Mm.
But then you become a ghost, actually.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. There are certain occasions where it's auspicious and beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few. We are not capable of any of those, so...
what if your life was in danger and I was the savior, but in saving you, I died?
Everybody said, because also, that means by that self-sacrifice, actually, that by extremely pious act, you're also, your next birth will be very elevated.
And besides, it's voluntary, something that you just do.
Yeah.
You want to do it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And nobody's forcing you. It's not like...
Yeah, that's true.
You are inspired to do it. You want to happily give your life. That's...
But suicide is done out of self-hatred.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, woe is me, the whole world is against me. Now I'm going to kill myself.
Right. That's not to be done. Okay. Yeah.
Well, just on that note, you're talking about the woman, for example, let's say the woman, she wants to suicide because her husband's on the fire.
Uh-huh.
The question is really about following you, what is a spiritual master when you're a woman? Because there's no brahmachari, there's actually no brahmachari in the ashram officially in Vedic culture, or sannyas ashram for women. So to follow you as a spiritual master, of course he's going to make an order spin for us. But there's, you know, like, how can we institute it so much when there's going to be other demands on us, you know. I mean, you have to constantly ask the spiritual master, you know, how can I apply this, or what should we do? Because, for example, you might have an order from the spiritual master, but then your aim is not to sort of take your path, your aim is to be
really
chaste to your husband.
Well, that's usually the order of the spiritual master to begin with, isn't it?
Oh.
So that's okay. Everybody has conflicts. And the point is that one should be resolutely determined to follow the order of the spiritual master. And one accepts the things that are favorable and rejects the unfavorable things. You can see that Prabhupada, first of all, tried to stay in his household life and do it. And when that became totally impossible, he gave it up. Prabhupada said that he was, when he was doing business, his plan to go to the West was he'll do business, make a lot of money, so that he would have some facility. He mentions this, you know, to do it. But he said, Krishna made me a business failure. It did not work. And he saw that it was Krishna's desire. Because, as it turned out, he didn't have to waste his time doing that, or when he came suddenly, you know, there was money. Even though he showed up with almost nothing. Somehow or other, money came. So it was unnecessary. So Krishna made me a business failure. Dr. Juswami told me that the reason he failed was he was a distributor of pharmaceutical products, and he used to give people stuff on consignment. But he was not very good at collecting accounts receivable. I don't think he was nasty enough to be a good businessman. Ruthless enough, or mean enough. You know. Mercy doesn't work in business. They found a better use for his merciful nature. So one just has to. Sometimes you may not see. Just as Prabhupada said, I didn't know I'd have to do this or that, and you can see that Prabhupada tried this, didn't work. So he tried this and it didn't work. And he tried that, it didn't work. And so I think that's the way that one proceeds in this world. Even actually, Prabhupada once said, you learn from experience, and experience means you make mistakes. So don't be afraid of making mistakes. The only thing that's wrong is to fail to learn from them. But this way, one finds one's way. What exactly one should do? Well, I think in anyone's circumstances, one should do those things. The first order of the spiritual masters chants 16 rounds and follow the four regular principles. If one does that and sticks to that, and then tries somehow or other to find some way to give Krishna consciousness to somebody else, then I think Krishna will like go to work. Remember, you're dealing with God, so there's so many obstacles, he can remove them just like that. It's not hard for him. So he will take care of those obstacles. I've always found myself that in whatever circumstance we use, we do everything we can under those conditions to become Krishna conscious. When in those circumstances we have made as much advancement as we can possibly make, Krishna will change them. Otherwise, he's not in the business of subverting the spiritual advancement of devotees. Quite the contrary.
Did you make an allusion earlier, something to the effect that there was impropriety with the devotees that went to London?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was.
Okay.
Yeah. Prabhupada talked about this. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had received a huge donation. He was a secretary to one of the Maharajas or something, or the prince of someplace. I forgot his name. But before he embarked on his spiritual career, Bhaktisiddhanta had been a secretary. And so he approached him and got a huge donation. These guys had rooms full of rubies, you know, those days. And got a huge donation to build a temple in London. And he sent the money, no temple and no money. Mm-hmm. It disappeared. So that's what happened. Yes.
Is it safe to assume that if one is following the strictly following the instructions of the spiritual master, any obstacles after that point are given directly by Krishna?
We should accept them that way. Sometimes, you know, Kali throws up some obstacles and things like that, you know. But sometimes we see that things that look like obstacles turn out to be opportunities in disguise. And it's always, when something happens that looks bad or looks like a misfortune, I have to think, well, how can I use this to advance in Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada wanted to go, you know, since 1936, right? He wanted to go to the West. He didn't show up here until 1965. Imagine if Prabhupada had come to America in, say, 1956. I mean, he really came at just the right time. And so Krishna's in charge of timing. So sometimes he just keeps you on hold for a while. But he's so intelligent. I mean, Krishna, he's just doing so many things at once. And so what looks like obstacles may turn out not to be. But it doesn't mean our foolishness, if we do something ourselves, it's stupid, but that's Krishna's desire. Prabhupada told some devotees at one point, there was a businessman willing to get a place for the devotees at a temple in New York. I forgot his name.
Carl?
No. But there's, I don't think they have his real name in the Lilamrita too, so they have it. Anyway,
Price.
He
Price,
yeah, that's right. And he wanted a kind of big deposit and get the building, and Prabhupada told them, don't do it, and they did it anyway, and the guy
$5,000.
Yeah, split with all that, and that was a lot of money. And I think they got some of it back eventually, but so then someone said, well, if it happened, it must have been Krishna's desire. And he says, it was not Krishna's desire. You were idiots. Fools, I told you that. But it was not Krishna's desire. He was so upset.
But that's because he told them.
Yeah, he told them.
They went against the orders.
Yeah, they did. That's right. That's right. Yeah?
So if you can only take on some of the instructions of your spiritual master, that doesn't mean you're not going to make any advancements. You can't take it all on.
That's true. Right? Whatever you do is good. Once you take do it all on, and also I think it's helpful to be working toward increasing. Take on the rest. That should be the goal, and you know, to keep making more and more advancement toward the goal of following all the orders of the spiritual master. I think most of us are in that shape, one level or another. But the main thing is, we don't judge whether people are perfect or not perfect, or the path of to pure devotional service, of to success in pure devotional service, is probably called the slow, gradual. And so people will be situated in various places along this path. People should not be judged by their place on this path. They should, the standard of judgment should be that, am I making advancement? Am I sincerely trying to improve? And anyone who's doing that is good. Anyone who has stopped doing that, no matter how far up they are, is in trouble.
And if you can assess for yourself that you're making some kind of advancement, that will increase your faith to take on
more? Yes, definitely.
You have to start at a point where you have some faith,
yeah,
and take it on,
yeah,
and then do,
yeah,
it.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Then you couldn't help thinking when you're reading the Prabhupada before this one.
Mm-hmm.
When the spiritual master, the charya, leaves,
mm-hmm,
and the description Prabhupada gives of what happens,
mm-hmm,
I couldn't help thinking that, well, some people might read this, oh, well, look at this stuff, see what you know, what the management, you know, did or something. Can you just comment on that?
I can look at ISKCON and see that, sure. Although my view on ISKCON is maybe not the same as everybody. Many people had this view on ISKCON until 1977. Everyone was blissfully engaged in Krishna consciousness. There was no Maya, and then Prabhupada left and Maya set in. No, actually there was more Maya. But at least it was offset by Srila Prabhupada's presence. And in general, leaving Prabhupada aside, ISKCON is a much better place than it was when Prabhupada was here. And people like to, you know, there's nostalgia. You know, nostalgia is, by definition, is that longing for a past that was never there. So there's a lot of nostalgia. And in some ways, I can understand it, because there were some, because we had unified leadership, and Prabhupada was, everybody was enthusiastic. There were no critics of Prabhupada in the movement. Doesn't mean people weren't critics of Prabhupada, it's just that they couldn't go to some other temple and stay there. They didn't, they left, that's all. You just couldn't say it, whatever you had. So it was pretty unified in that way too. And everybody had faith in Srila Prabhupada. Nobody criticized him, nobody doubted him, and that's Prabhupada's his special characteristic. But also, in some way, the fact is every single person was Prabhupada's disciple. We are all all his disciples. There were many advantages at that time, but the main thing was that Prabhupada was there, and he really, really, really was had a great deal of intelligence, spiritual intelligence, to give guidance and direction. So we missed out on some of that, but still he gave his orders. So things are there's difficulties within ISKCON. Again, you just have to look and see that what ISKCON's mission is also very, very difficult. Because, you see, Prabhupada had to live with. He had to live with a number of difficulties, and one was that he witnessed his spiritual master's mission, which was unified and extremely powerful, completely fall apart and collapse. He had to see that. And as a result, he came to America all by himself. If Bhaktisiddhanta had been successful, there would have been 15 people coming over. 20. You know, there. But there was, because of that collapse, there was only one person, and who was a marginal person. I remember very early on, where I heard how one of Prabhupada's godbrothers just didn't. Although we were thinking Prabhupada had done this wonderful thing, he just said he was never very important. Because, as Prabhupada said, I was a rotten householder. Obviously, something somebody said, or some mentality that he used to get, was directed toward him. So he came over here and had to almost start from scratch. So again, we're trying to do an ISKCON. Prabhupada didn't want a single acharya. I mean, something very interesting had to happen. He wanted to keep up with Guru Parampara, that's Krishna's system. And at the same time, he wanted all gurus with their kind of power they have to work together under a governing board. This was what Bhaktisiddhanta tried to accomplish. It didn't happen. He formed a GBC, or he wanted a GBC, and they never did it, or they did it and didn't last but a very short time. And then they went back to the old model of a single guru, and that person fell down, and so on, and everybody ended up in law courts with each other. So it's difficult, because basically you're retooling a tradition. Because this idea of, for the modern world, the idea of a board of directors is something that came from the West as a formal structure.
The railway system?
Yeah, the Indian railways, the board of directors is called the Governing Body Commission. If you're an American, that phrase, Governing Body Commission, you can immediately hear England. No, that's English. That's British English, not American. You know, just a minute. So how to do that? So we now have one party on the one side, the Ritvik Party. They basically, their solution to the problem is get rid of the gurus. So you don't have any other centers of power or influence. See? The other party, said Narayan Maharaj, bring in the single acharya. both of those would be failures of Prabhupada's mission. So what we are trying to do is something that's difficult. And the only way to do it is the same old way. You try this, you try that, you learn from your mistakes, and finally you get it right. So I really think that the ISKCON should be judged by the difficulty of what we are trying to do. And that the other alternatives from the outside are all abandoning Prabhupada's program.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, I was just wondering, what did you mean that? Could you explain a little more that Prabhupada was more than...
That what?
Prabhupada was
the Gaudiya Math. Mm-hmm. There was a system of temples, 60 or some temples. The only people that ever lived in a temple were brahmacharis and sannyasis. No women and no householders. They all lived outside. And it was expected that householders would be materially attached, people who would practice some, but and give some money. But they were not, only rarely engaged in the active preaching activities. They were mostly supporters and facilitators. And so Prabhupada was not important. In fact, he didn't belong, he wasn't part of the institution. So when Prabhupada came to the West and did this thing, because many people who were leaders of various mats, or of a bunch of mats, they were all saying, I'm going to the West. But nah, first we need this, and first we need this, and first we need this, and, but I'm going to go. They all knew that, and many of them had admittedly guilty consciences. Because, and then Prabhupada, out of nowhere, is what they call a black horse candidate, right? Suddenly, boom, he did it. He did it. And the reception Prabhupada got when he went back to India was not applause. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much for doing what Bhaktisiddhanta wanted. Because when Prabhupada went to Mayapur and wanted to purchase some land, some of his grand brothers worked very, very hard to see that he could not get any land. Hmm. They went around to the farmers and said, don't sell them anything. And they went to the land commissioners or whoever they are and gave them a little,
bakshish.
This was going on. They tried everything. They were so fried. And then they, this is people like everybody likes, you know, there's a revisionist history, you know, but almost to a person they did like this. Look, the first time I remember when we went to Maya for the first time, it was great, you know, there's this whole street and there's all these temples of Krishna temples, you know? And people didn't think we were weird just because we had Dila and Dhotis and Tilak. Of course we were white bodies, so that was another thing, but we walked down Bhaktisiddhanta Road and me and another guy, we come and we go into town, we want to see the deities, we bow down and take darshan, and there's a whole bunch of people there, and there's some sannyasis there, and they're speaking in Bengali, which of course we don't understand a word of, and they bring us over and they sit down, and this guy is pointing to us and talking to us, and we're thinking, oh, he's glorifying Prabhupada because he brought these people to the West. What he was saying to them is, these are my Western disciples. And so we had to stop going to these temples, right? And then one day I had this mysterious encounter with Srila Prabhupada one time, and it was late at night, and not late at 9 o'clock or something like that, but somebody found me and they shook my hand and said, "Is it Prabhupada wants to see you?" I was a temple president, but nothing. I couldn't understand why Prabhupada wanted to see me. And I got up and went over to his room, and he was in his room by himself, and there were two sannyasis I could recognize from the Gaudiya Math, two of Prabhupada's guide brothers. I offered obeisances, and I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And then he said to me, so what are you writing your doctoral dissertation about? Because I had written to him, you know, that I was working on one, and he'd encouraged me to get a PhD to finish it. And so I just put a proposal in. By this was a proposal that ultimately I couldn't get a committee together on because it was too big. But I said, Prabhupada, I'm writing a doctoral dissertation about the historical, spiritual, economic, social, and psychological necessity of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, oh, all around necessity. I said, yes, sir, the Prabhupada says, very good. Thank you very much. I offer my obeisances and I walk out. And I thought, why is that? I just puzzled. But then later, I found out what was going on. The people were saying, yeah, Prabhupada's got these American disciples, but they're all drug-addicted hippies. So therefore, he called in somebody and said, with the false premise that if you're writing a doctoral dissertation, you're a drug-addicted hippie. So he's kind of just showing me off so to, you know, kind of offset these kind of stories, because they were just minimal. This was going on in these days. It was very heavy. This kind of plotting and scheming and all this kind of stuff. They didn't welcome him because they didn't do it. And then when Prabhupada did do it, they, you know, had guilty consciousness and were envious because he wasn't one of the guys. You know, wasn't one of the big team. People that was supposed to do it. So that's the history of what happened. So, you know, welcome to the material world, welcome to the human race. What can we do it? You can still be Krishna conscious in spite of all this stuff. So I think that at least as far as what Prabhupada wanted, this Krishna consciousness movement. See, why a board of directors? Why a GBC? Well, because if you have the traditional system of a single acharya, there's a lot of problems. There are very few people who are really fit for that position. Because really there isn't any accountability to anybody else. Everything depends upon a rare combination of qualities. And what do you do when there's no one really that highly qualified? And I don't think just you need to be spiritually qualified. You need lots of stuff. Then you put somebody else in who's not qualified. Oh, that's great, you know. I mean, look at the history of the Roman Catholic Church. there may be periods where you don't have any qualified person. Or what if there's five qualified people? That's another set of problems. So I just think for stability, long term stability over time and also space, this was the system that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhakti Vinod Thakur really wanted to do to fashion this movement in a way that'll work in the modern world. And it's not against Vaishnava principles at all. There was a period of time when, in essence, the Krishna conscious movement wasn't that organized, and you know, there were six Goswamis and some other people who were the leaders, and you know, there were groups of people. So it doesn't have to, you know, it's not an absolute requirement that there be one person at the head of an institution and so on. This is what it is. So it is something that we're working at it. And I think that everybody who keeps trying and doesn't give up and doesn't substitute some other something that Prabhupada didn't want it, serving Srila Prabhupada's desire.
Prabhupada wrote, when one becomes serious to follow the mission of spiritual master, his resolution is tantamount to sin to God.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that seeing spiritual master is also tantamount to sin?
He says.
Is that also his?
Yeah. Let me get back to the... Here we go.
Yeah.
Here, okay. What I said is you'll notice we're probably in conclusion. You see that paragraph?
Yes.
If a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Lapu. Previously, these terms have been applied to the spiritual master.
Mm-hmm.
But now Prabhupada is really by this way of associating with not the spiritual master, he says here, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that one is tantamount to the other. As good as or equivalent to, or the, because the spiritual master, Prabhupada is really making the point here. What is the spiritual master? The spiritual master is a person who embodies the super soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what the spiritual master is. So sometimes it is said that there's only one spiritual master, and that's true. Whoever embodies the super soul, the spiritual master represents the super soul. So these two things really go together. Because what the instructions of the spiritual master are, in fact, what the super soul is telling us. Right now, we have no access to those Chaitanya Guru instructions. But if we follow those orders that are given by the spiritual master, whatever else we need to know, or whatever further guidance is there, also will come, in the absence of the physical spiritual master, will come from the Chaitanya Guru.
So everything that we always hear about spiritual master being as good as God, or we should worship the spiritual master as if he is God, etc., this is basically because he is the embodiment of God's...
Yeah, his will, his orders, his instructions, yeah. As good as God means whatever you can get from God, you can get from the spiritual master. It doesn't mean that, you know, he can leap tall buildings at a single bound. He's not God, but as good as, and for every practical purpose we have, he's as good as God. German theologians once came up with this concept, Gott für uns. Gott für uns. Uns, you know, God for us. I mean, how God is made available to us. And we have a lot of them. God for us.
Could you clarify that a little more? What do you mean by God for us? Because it sounds like it's like with the Hare Krishna. God is for us. We are doing everything.
No, God making himself accessible or available to us in a certain form.
Hmm. No, but when you said it just now...
That's what I meant.
Oh, you didn't mean it in the derogatory. I thought you were saying the derogatory form.
No.
Oh, okay.
Just because in German does not mean it's derogatory.
No.
German theologians are impressive people sometimes.
I'm sorry, forgive me. I had a misunderstanding.
Okay, yeah. No, I wasn't deriding them, though. I was endorsing that concept.
Okay.
Although I don't know what exactly they meant about it, and what it really means is maybe a different thing. Yeah, you had your hand.
Yeah, can you, obvious thing, but can you spell out the difference between, because you mentioned the fact that the queen's attachment for her husband, the saintly husband. The saintly king was not a material attachment, a spiritual attachment. So can you just contrast the
I was talking about the attachment. Yeah. Oh, no, I said this in connection with the disciple and the spiritual master. If the disciple cries for the spiritual master, you shouldn't say, "Oh, don't be attached." So that's okay, right? If a wife cries for a husband, maybe or maybe not. If the attachment is that the husband was actually, that there was a spiritual relationship, and the relationship with the husband and wife, it can be either, usually in marriages it starts out material, but if you're both devotees, gradually you begin to relate to each other more and more as devotees. Cancers have a hard time understanding this.
Who?
Cancers.
Oh, this is, I'm Virgo. I'm Virgo.
You should wear your true sign.
I was just to throw you off.
I'm so relieved. It's such a hard time in spiritual life. So full of defenses.
How would a disciple recognize his attachment to, or how could a disciple tell whether his attachment to the spiritual master is material or spiritual?
I'm trying to think of a case where that's material attachment. Sometimes a disciple will become attached to the spiritual master and yet not really see the spiritual master in relationship to Krishna. And some symptoms of that will be that there's various things. It's depending how they do that. One is they will try to offer the spiritual master all kinds of sense gratification. That's one thing. Sometimes they become real fanatics. And that is, say, they will not see the spiritual master as somebody who embodies a certain principle, but somebody... They cannot worship their own spiritual master, and they become feel threatened that somebody else has another spiritual master. Yeah. They become fanatics. Oh, my spiritual master is the only one that can save anybody. He is the only pure devotee. Oh, no one else is really a pure devotee. You're all going to go to hell. Unless somehow or other, often that's a material because of they don't see him in relationship to Krishna.
But they seem to feel that he's the only one who can deliver people to Krishna.
So they feel he's the only one that can save them. Their conception of salvation is, well, they know officially it's Krishna, but their conception of salvation is something else. These people are usually motivated by fear. They become true believers. They become like, you know, the thing is that they want, I mean, any god will do. They just have to be fanatics. If they're not a fanatic this, they'll become a fanatic that. Because they have really profound insecurities they're not dealing with, and very profound fears, and by taking shelter of somebody and submerging themselves totally and completely, it becomes a kind of idolatry. And We often see political leaders get followers like that. Sometimes rock stars get followers like that.
When it comes to the department of having affection for the spiritual master, you can say that, well, the affection of the spiritual is the affection is due to, you know, you're experiencing how your spiritual master is helping you that advance spiritually, but it's materialistic if somehow it's due to something else. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's people in this world who say, you know, I saw Prabhupada disciples like that. Here's a very big, important person, and I just want to be with that person. Mm-hmm. Groupies. That's the word I'm looking for. Groupies. And they're guru groupies sometimes.
Impressed more with his position and his
image. What a great image, guys like that, and they like to shine in the reflected glory and so on.
But then Nanda Maharaj calls them gurupis.
That's a little Sanskrit Sunday there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a way for us to know something that happens, whether it's our foolishness or desire? Like, because the example you gave before, Prabhupada was there to say, you're foolish. I wasn't interested.
You know, if you don't trust your own judgment, then you find somebody has better judgment than you and ask. The only thing I can suggest.
First one is understand the flow of the poor districts we have here in this one. 1, 2, 3, 4 that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not able to understand the flow of the context of the
whole thing here. Mm-hmm. The flow of the four?
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't even sort of... There's four texts I really like a lot, and I tried to put them in a certain relationship that they would seem to flow, but that's not, like, the main thing. So if they don't flow so well, that's okay. You could put them in various orders, but the first one is there because it really talks explicitly about the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness. So why not begin in the beginning? The second one is there is because it really talks about the very important positive thing we need for advancement in Krishna consciousness, this idea of concentration and purification and how to take advantage of Srimad Bhagavatam and how also to see our movement in the light of something that makes Bhagavatam possible. The text has to be in a context for Bhagavatam to really take place, and Prabhupada created that context. So then we know how to cultivate Srimad Bhagavatam, and the same thing applies, Yutatis Mutandi, to the chanting of the holy name. Then the third one really deals a little more deeply with the process of purification. The second one we talked about becoming pure in mind and becoming pure in actions, and so this big obstacle is not just this sin or that sin, but the whole tendency to material activities, even pious things, have to be gotten rid of. So we discussed about Lord Nrisimhadev and how he removes obstacles in devotional service. And then it seems to me many of these things are gathered together here, and especially this in the context of how to continue the Krishna consciousness movement. Now that we've dealt with ourselves, and it sort of goes back to the second text of the social concerns and brings it forward further. That's my understanding of this sequence. That's why I put them in this sequence. But you. It's okay.
And the second matter I had was this helping something about passed on to only a single, I mean, this mental pain. It is to have faith on the instructions of the system, of the system master. But looking at the kind of the education background that we have, this is something which we are not supposed to have, and that is something which is very, very unscientific.
See, so in other words, we're talking about having faith or confidence in this, and that we don't believe in faith anymore, we want everything in reason.
Right.
No, this is the age of reason, but it's based on faith. you should understand this dichotomy between faith and reason is quite misunderstood, because all processes of knowledge begin or are rooted in faith. And those people who are really honest about their processes of knowledge will actually examine that faith. Most people, because they're technicians, don't do that. Philosophers do it sometimes, but not scientists. Because, for an example, even to get an ordinary education, to go to a university, say you're going to study science, a technical thing, you go into a classroom and you sit down and you open your notebook, and somebody you've never seen before in your life starts telling you things about something that you've never seen. They're talking about electrons, protons, neutrons, electron shells, covalent bonds. You've never seen it before, but you write it all down and you believe it. Why do you believe it? You believe it because you have faith. Because people tell you, and everybody, well, really, because everybody else believes it, that this is Columbia or NYU, so that's a certified, bona fide organization, and the professors, they have their doctorate degrees and everybody's certified, and so you just accept it. But it's on faith. Maybe your faith is well placed, but it's faith. And he tells you these things. Now, I have read philosophers who inquire into the foundations of faith, who point out that these are things that they're talking about, these chemists and physicists, electrons, protons, neutrons, are in principle unobservable. We don't see protons. You've seen pictures of them? Atoms? You've seen pictures? You don't see that. What you see is little phosphorescence dots on a cathode ray tube. You don't see them. How are they this? Well, there's a whole apparatus there and everything else, and there's a whole lot of interpretation that goes into it. But these philosophers call protons, electrons, neutrons. You know what they call them? Metaphysical entities. They do. And if you look into their reasons, they're just being more rigorous empiricists than the empiricists. So this is an act of faith. Even all these things, they take place in the whole mental construct. Certain people have decided what constitutes science. Certain people have decided, or there's a consensual decision, what is an experiment, how knowledge shows up, what's interesting and what's not interesting, what we can ignore, what we can't ignore. So there's actually, if you study it, at the basis of any process of knowledge, there's a certain faith. And when the process of knowledge seems to produce valuable results, you figure your faith is okay.
Right.
Then in the course of time, although you've been going on with this certain process of knowledge for six generations, you suddenly start to get things that don't work. You start to produce anomalies. Anomalies are things that your theory or your process will not explain. What do? Say it's wrong? No, you don't. You ignore them. And you kind of put them away until you put them in this closet, you know, and they put four in the closet and everybody pretends it's not there. And then one day, you know, the door breaks down and they come pouring out. You can't ignore it anymore. And then somebody comes forward and they give you. So then Newtonian mechanics gets replaced by Einstein and so on. And then just because everything we told you for 200 years is wrong, we don't say we lied to you. We say, now there's progress. And you go on. But actually, all the people who believe that Newtonian physics was the key to the universe, their faith was misplaced. Because it's wrong. This is what happens. So so our process is not any different. We say to you, look, here's a process of knowledge. Could Prabhupada call it a process of knowledge? Yeah, you have to accept a spiritual master and learn. So say you go to your chemistry class and you raise your hand and you say, you know, how do I know this is true? How do I know these electrons, protons, neutrons, and all, they're all doing these things? How do I know this is true? And they say, we have experiments. You know, this is not religion where you just accept some authority. We test everything by experiment. There's not an authority. It's democratic. It's open to everybody. It's public. Okay. So we have experiments. Okay, can I do the experiment? Yeah, you can do the experiment. Okay, let me do. Oh, wait a minute. You can't really do this experiment unless you understand the science that's around it. So you have to learn the whole system of chemistry. First, how long will that take? 7 years. And anyway, we don't let anybody go near that equipment until the second year of graduate school. So for 7 years, you have to have faith. But you know what happens? I mean, right now, you know, in any field of knowledge, you'll see in the New York Times science section, you know, there's been some new discovery in plasma physics or something. How many people do the experiments? Maybe there's 25. How many people understand them? 200. And everybody else, they accept it on faith. So if we say, you know, okay, look, Here's what you do, and as Prabhupada is saying, you will see Krishna. You do these things. Try it for 7 years. Give it 7 years, because you know you've got to learn to get it right, and you can make mistakes, and it's just like, you know, you're in a chem lab and you're doing some kind of chemistry and your test tubes are dirty, you won't get the results. So our test tubes, our mind has to be clean. So you have to have clean equipment and do things properly, and you will see the result. That's all. And I say, well, we're very democratic. Anyone can do it. But in any case, we have so many experts who have done the same thing, and they've all come up with the same result. Even if there's not agreement, but we also understand. Some people see God from this angle. There's Brahman, there's Paramatman, there's Bhagavan. You know, we can accommodate actually a great deal of diverse findings that are just as different aspects of the same thing. So I don't see why we're any different. This is a process of knowledge. Yeah, it begins in faith, but so does any other. But it is knowledge. That is to say, you are able to, by your own experience, ascertain these things. Okay? Anything else? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.